At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. On the other line, you have Kurt Hoge, Brewers reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering this Milwaukee Brewers team. Not a good week. Haven't had a kind of week like this in a while, but there were some developments for sure. The Brewers do go 2-4. They get swept in Texas. They win 2 of 3 against St. Louis. They win a wild one on Saturday night, a total rally from the dead. They haven't really stolen a game. And I might be forgetting something, but like there was that game against Arizona at the beginning of the year where they really had one stolen from them. And I don't know if I truly felt like they had stolen a game from someone. They did that on Saturday on the night that they clinched a playoff berth. Your Milwaukee Brewers are going to the playoffs, but you probably knew that was coming. Now it's a matter of catching the Cubs, getting a first round bye. That's where we're at. Kurt, I have a lot of questions though. Tough week. Tough week, not necessarily because of the offense. I think they did fine. They did okay. It's what they do, certainly. But the pitching, there are questions about this pitching staff. There is a possible injury that we'll get to. There is, you know, Freddy Peralta, interesting. I mean, has been incredible, kind of, but there's still some stuff there. And then there's Jacob Mizorowski. He pitched on Saturday night. That is the game I just mentioned, where they came back to win a wild one. 2 in the 8th, 3 in the 9th, 2 in the 10th to win. Hello. 9-8, beat the Cardinals, clinch a playoff spot. Good times. But Jacob Mizorowski was not good. This has been a recurring theme. His previous start, he did make it 7 innings against Pittsburgh, which was a nice showing for him. But I am wondering what you still think about him in terms of what the plan would be for him in the postseason. They are running out of starting pitchers, and I feel like he's going to have to continue to be one for at least the regular season. But in the playoffs, I don't know how trusted he can be right now. He has these moments where he loses it. Sometimes it's the first inning, sometimes it's later, but whether that's a reliever or starter, like neither is really satisfactory. So like, I wonder what you think about Miz right now, where he's at in his development and how they're going to deploy him in the playoffs, because it feels a little dicey.
Well, it's very dicey. His last 7 starts, I think in 6 of them, he's given up 3 runs or more. He hasn't pitched super duper deep. So he hasn't like, necessarily had a lot of, you know, like there hasn't been a huge blow up outing where he's given up 6-7 runs. There's been obviously the big innings, and this last start was more of just like he was hit around. Mm-hmm. He was frustrated.
They hit him hard. Clinched,
I don't know if you watched the video I posted, but he was like, we talked to him after they came back that thrilling win on clinch day. Wasn't the clinching victory kind of funny how that worked 2 years in a row that. Where they won on a comeback walk-off on the day they clinched, but it wasn't the clinching victory. Right. But it did make for a more jovial celebration for sure, even if it was subdued. But Mizorowski was definitely frustrated by his outing. And I don't know what to make of that because we haven't really seen it get to him too much, at least like in the interviews with him. So I can't really speak to like what exactly that means, but I don't think it's nothing. I think like there's certainly some frustration with like, I don't want to call it a lack of progress because he's developing, he's learning in the big leagues, and these outings matter a ton for his long-term development and maybe even his short-term development and how he looks in the postseason. But the results and the steps forward that you want to see haven't been there consistently enough. There was that great start against the Pirates, even a couple of these recent starts where he got hit a little bit, like that Diamondbacks start, I thought he was actually pretty good. The Philly start, he was pretty solid there as well. So it is an interesting decision the Brewers will have because they have 3 starters. They have 3 playoff starters. And I asked Murph about this before the start on Saturday of basically like, does he, are you, we still in the evaluation stage of if he starts, if he's in the bullpen? Like, are we deciding that based on how he looks in these games? And we went back to the outgetters phrase, JR. We haven't heard outgetters in a while.
Oh, we are so
back.
That's
what Murph went to. So I think that is, he did not answer the question, I think on purpose. But he did use the word outgetters, and I think that is the window into how this plays out in October. Mizrowski is going to pitch. It's the October arsenal. It is the October wild card guy that, like, you could just still just see going crazy in whatever role. I'm still in the exact same camp I've been in for the last month now with him of I think you limit the number of hitters he faces. I don't know what pocket you put him in, if it's in relief, if he starts. Maybe it doesn't matter a ton what role it is, but I think what matters more is he's a smaller part of a bigger puzzle piece than he would be if you're like trying to get 4 or 5 innings from him. Cause I just don't think he's at that stage of his development yet. Now, maybe they need to. Maybe he looks really good and they need it. But I think there's going to be a way to piece it together to maximize the whole thing.
I'm going to ask two, I think, somewhat related questions. And they're kind of, I don't know, they're the type of questions that I feel like are a little unfair to ask. But first one is, if you think the All-Star game thing was ultimately something that hurt him, I'll be honest, right up front, I don't think it really had anything to do with any of this. But we all discussed his rush to the All-Star game, and he had been really, really good over 5 starts, and it was a very early thing. Everyone sort of admitted it was super early to do something like that, and it's been a little rough since then. And number two, I guess as you look at this season, I think it's a successful season because he made it to the big leagues, and he flashed some incredible stuff. But now as you look in total, it's almost like that they're really just flashes. I mean, they were mostly early where he looked like somebody who could dominate. And now every time he goes out there, it's like it's going to be kind of an inning to inning thing. You don't really know what you're going to get. You're going to get strikeouts. You're going to get velocity. But maybe, you know, it's you got to hold your breath a little bit. Is this a successful season? Is this a step back because he did have that success and then couldn't sustain it at the big league level here in his rookie season? Because I imagine they're going to want him to be very, very good right out of the gate next year. And I don't know if they can rely on that going into 2026.
Yeah, that's a good question. I got to sit and think about it. But I do think it is a success because Mizrowski, while this is a great Brewers team and he's going to play a significant role and has played a pretty significant role this year and could play an even more significant role in October, depending on how long that thing goes for them. It's significant for this reason. He dominated Nashville. He took real developmental steps forward. I still think he is someone who's going to struggle with command and control. That's never going to be totally, like, I just don't see that ever being totally fixed. But this is also a guy who's walking just over 10% of the hitters he's facing. That's not a great number. Not a great number. But for him, I think that's right around where he wants, or, you know, like that's a gold zone. That's a, like, kind of a Goldilocks zone for him, in a way, because this is a guy who, like, we've seen that number at 14, 15% in the minors. We've clearly seen the problems with his control. And so to walk under 4 guys per 9 innings in your first trip through the big leagues, like, he has taken steps forward in that area. And there's just still a lot of things he has left to learn about pitching and, like, refining, you know, going from control to command is definitely one of them, and sequencing and, like, how his arsenal works and the day-to-day routine and like the All-Star game stuff, handling the attention, handling the pressure. All of this stuff is new, 23-year-old kid. I don't think it's been a smashing success, but I do think it has been a success. And even though, you know, because he got off to such a great start, it's a little underwhelming how he's been since coming off the IL. Maybe more than a little underwhelming. I think it's fair to say it's been underwhelming. I think there's still a lot to look forward to here.
You know, you mentioned they've got 3 pitchers, 3 bona fide guys that they're going to turn to when the playoffs kick in. That's obviously Freddy Peralta, it's Quinn Priester, and it's Brandon Woodruff. But I want to check in on Woodruff. He did not pitch this week. He got kicked back a bunch of days from, is that going to be a Friday start, back to next week, Wednesday. I think it's honestly, like it makes sense, even if Brandon Woodruff isn't experiencing any discomfort or fatigue or whatever, because you're going to go to the playoffs. You know that. You might as well. You can sort of start to line things up now, you know, really try to get your ducks in a row for which pitchers are going to go to which games. And, you know, there's no sense in pushing it with him, a guy who has said very openly, could, you know, can't really do the standard 4 days rest, needs five or more. You know, I guess, like, for a guy who hasn't had the best, you know, sort of the best numbers lately, it I guess is a little concerning that he went ahead and, you know, basically they just skipped him a turn in the rotation again for a team that doesn't really have its full complement of starting pitchers at this point. I guess that's not entirely fair, but we'll talk about the Quintana situation in a minute. I don't know. Does it raise an alarm bell to you that, like, are we sure he's capable of pitching in the playoffs? Because even though they have these extra off days, and I mean, of course he's capable of pitching, you know, a game, you know, you're not going to get 6 days off before the next presumably big opportunity. So, like, is that going to hamstring them a little bit? What do you think about Brandon Woodruff right now?
Well, it definitely comes into play in the playoff rotation for sure. Like, your game two starter, right? That's the one that this year can come back on for game five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if they would do that, though. It isn't, because in the past it's been the American League that has had that extra day. This year it is the National League. So, yes,
the National League, yeah.
Two can come back in five, but only on 4 days rest. That's regular rest. Yeah. You'd think that's probably not Woodruff.
So that's kind of what I'm saying here. And then game three or whatever could be on a regular rest. It's kind of funny that this is, like, an aside, but it feels like every answer I give, and it's felt like this for like 3 or 4 weeks or maybe even longer, has been like, we're not even talking about the regular season Brewers. We're so much of it is hyper-focused on the postseason, and that's fair. But also the baseball postseason is so fickle that it's a lot of investment in something that might not matter. But here we are. Let's talk about things that don't matter.
Well, Brandon Woodruff, I
would probably pitch Quinn Priester too. That's something that matters. I think that matters. Don't tell me it doesn't matter. I was alive in 2000. Well, I guess it wasn't necessarily the rotation order, but the rotation decisions in 08 and 11. I lived through them. As did, if you're listening to this, you probably did too.
Probably.
Do we have any 2005 born listeners?
I think if anybody was born after 2008.
Oh God, they're in college now.
Yeah. I think they should email us. Let us know what it's like following the Brewers, having not lived through 2008 or really remembering much of 2011. I mean, they must love that. It's like, yeah, the Brewers are just a good baseball team. They've always been a good baseball team. We are rapidly running into,
I have not wrapped my mind around this that concept yet. That's a new one to me. There are people, there are like real, well, like your son, they're like these diehard kids that love the Brewers, and they're just like, the Brewers are always good. This is That's awesome. True. They're like the Packers.
They cannot understand for the life of them when I'm like, oh, they're probably going to blow it. You know, if I say anything pessimistic, they're like, why are you being pessimistic? And it just occurred to me, it's because they never saw the 1990s Brewers. They never saw what happened in 2007 or 2014 even. I mean, they were around, but they were like babies. They don't care about any of that. They're like, all they do is win, win, win. Why are you worried about it?
2014 feels so long ago.
It was so long ago. It was 11 years ago. So many lives have changed in 11 years. I mean, that's like a different era of baseball now. That's over a decade ago.
I never, like, gave two thoughts to, like, you know, the idea of a midlife crisis being a real thing. And then you start to just feel old and realize why people do. You're still in the window. You got a little bit of room left.
I think it's closed. I think my midlife closed. Yeah. I think I am kind of in this for the long haul. It's too expensive to, like, get divorced and buy a car. I can't do that.
I wasn't implying that.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, I'm probably not going to do that. Extreme amount of work and financial commitment. I will not do that.
There are other crash outs.
I could go skydiving or, you know, like go on a personal quest to see every stadium in baseball. Again, all very expensive things. I am a journalist. I do not have the money for this.
Have you been to Pado recently?
No, long time I've been since I was last at Pado. I haven't even seen the new sports book there. We should go.
I've never been to Pado. I'm
do you
up
think
on
we could do a live show? I'm can we do a live Casinos. Micro?
I think we got other places that we should do that at first. Then okay. That sounds a sports gambling place. I think that's a, I don't know.
Probably.
I get a little. Well, unless you want to pay us. Unless you want to pay us. And suddenly, the shoe's on suddenly, the other foot.
I don't think it's our vibe. I don't think we will be doing a live show really anywhere because it's just too convenient to do it on these here couches. We were talking. Your point from before is well observed. You know, we have, because we know the Brewers are going to the playoffs, have spent so much time on how are they going to line up their rotation? Who's going to make this roster? By the way, I still don't know that. They're going to have three first basemen and they all have a really good case. So that's weird, but we'll talk about that in a second. It's going to come down to who's healthy, who's available. Like Frankie Montas was just kind of like available for game two last year. I mean, they had other options, but like it didn't not make sense. It was not, in my mind, an ideal situation, but it did not make sense. So, you know, you have to account for so many variables still, even with 2 weeks to go. It's really it is unfortunately obscuring the fact that this team has 91 wins and have clinched a playoff spot earlier than any team in Milwaukee Brewers history. They were the first big league team to do it by 24 hours. That's really, really impressive. Maybe actually 36 hours, depending on who you believe, but we can talk about that later too. I just like Brandon Woodruff, I guess, he's a success story because he came back from this crazy injury and has been effective at times. He's obviously not the Brandon Woodruff that we knew from early in his career, but he's much later in his career. So that's sensible now too. I wonder what we're headed toward with the pitching. It feels like there is a cliff on this pitching staff between really with everyone, except maybe Quinn Priester. I have questions about everyone.
You don't have Quinn Priester questions?
I mean, only insofar as I haven't seen him like thrive in a playoff setting before. So there's some experience questions there, but honestly, he's like the most reliable. They've won 18 consecutive Quinn Priester outings.
If that's the barometer, Brandon Woodruff is on an island and everyone else in the Milwaukee Brewers pitching staff is like,
oh, Freddy. Well,
actually, okay. That's not true. Trevor McGill.
Freddie's pitched a bunch.
Nick Mears threw an inning.
That is true. Nick Mears not healthy right now. Yes. Maybe though soon. Trevor McGill maybe soon.
Yeah, I believe so. See. Yeah, the pitching. I think the pitching is a question. You've thought it's a question for like the last 6 weeks. So, you know, maybe pat yourself on the back on this. But I do think the pitching just hasn't been at a tip top form for a little bit now. I also hesitate sometimes with some Brewers things because it feels like you can find things to nitpick. They've been playing 500 ball for a month now, and that's fine. Like as soon as they finish that 14 game winning streak, you're like, well, if they play 500 ball, that's probably like almost expected and they'll be fine. And they have played 500 ball, and then you still feel like there are things to point out, and it's fair, but you also wonder if sometimes you're just reaching for too many things, but I do think there's something with the pitching staff for sure. And does it currently have the horses to ride as long as you need it to ride in the playoffs? I think that might be my biggest question about the team now, which is it feels crazy to say. I mean, there's some other smaller questions. Outfield defense is definitely one of them for me right now.
Oh, that's
base stealing. I think that remains one. But just pitching on the whole, it's not bad. It's not bad. It's been fine to good even. I mean, they gave up 3 runs on Sunday, and it felt like it was not a great day. So
that's right, and all concentrated together, like it was all in one inning, and they just.
Correct.
They held it together for the rest of the game, just could not mount enough of an answer. And oddly enough, did the thing that we want them to do, which is hit some home runs. They hit 2 home runs. It was the piecing together of additional runs that oddly failed them, unlike the night before when they hit 0 home runs and scored 9 runs, including a walk-off winner. Yes, every game is its own adventure. Let's talk a little about Freddy Peralta. He finished his scoreless outings streak at 30 consecutive innings, a truly impressive run to threaten Teddy Higuera's franchise record among starting pitchers of 32 consecutive scoreless innings. He didn't quite get there, and he had kind of a rough outing, in fact, in Texas. That was the series finale there. Freddy, like we keep revisiting this. You know, like we are talking about one of the best pitchers in the National League, and it is obviously at some point insulting to continually question what he brings to the table. He is unique, though, in that he is not a, you know, of the sort of top flight starting pitchers. Him and maybe Blake Snell are the guys who just do not go deep into games, and that burns you. And like we have seen Aaron Ashby, who has worked constantly, and you could say that about a lot of guys in the A bullpen, but like, you know, you have to bridge a really huge gap. Now, in the playoffs, I would say most guys aren't going beyond the fifth anyway, so I don't think that really makes a huge difference. But it's not even so much about the overall length of the game and just the sort of inefficiency and killing innings and you know, going 0-2 to a guy and then throwing waste pitches. You wrote a lot about this at JS Online this week when you were in Texas covering the team. And just sort of like that, the last thing that's really missing is just, you know, hitting the gas, like slamming the door when you have a guy on the ropes or when you have an inning on the ropes. It feels like it just takes a 5 to 7 extra pitches when the Brewers are in a position to get out quickly. So kind of recap what you covered there and your thoughts on Freddy Peralta as, you know, I get so tired of using the word ace, but like he is going to be their number one option in the playoffs and has been their number one option all year. He is having a tremendous season, great season, but that is something that could potentially hold them back as we get into the biggest part of the year.
Yeah. He throws way too many non-competitive pitches. This is not a new thing. It's not something that just came up in this start against the, where they playing? I was there. The Rangers. That's right. Where I was eating brisket. It was good.
In Globe Life Field.
I had tacos too. Mm. I had some chopped brisket as well. I did Texas. I did Texas right.
I got to go to the across the street or down the parking lot, whatever we're talking about, to a game at Jerry World when I was
Jerry World. You and I have had very different experiences there, but I'm happy for you.
It was freezing. It was bitterly cold, but like,
really?
Yes, it was nightmarishly cold. My face hurt. It wasn't snowing or anything, and it wasn't like storming. It was just so unbearable around that stadium.
That's interesting, but inside, because the Super Bowl was like that too, if I remember correctly.
It was. That was more ice storm. That was more like serious weather. This wasn't that. It was just like bitter wind. It was crazy. Anyway, I ate, though, like a king inside that press box. That is a glorious, glorious place to have a meal and to enjoy some sports. Strong recommend. You deserve it. I'll take that.
It's a very weird setup, though. That ballpark is very low on my rankings.
Mm, yeah.
I'm using up my take right here.
So I'm going to save it.
I'll scrap something together.
Okay.
No. I'll save it.
Okay.
We'll broaden. Okay. It's just a weird vibe there. Not even talking about the ballpark. It's a weird, like the Arlington setup is bizarre. It's like an industrial park with two massive stadiums just plopped in the middle.
That's correct. It's weird. Oh, and a Great America, like a Six Flags, not a Great America, but Six Flags. Yes. Right across the way.
And a water park that I don't think is in operation anymore. Anyway, Freddy Peralta misses way too much when he gets the two strikes. And it's like his stuff is so good that he can miss. He's never been he hasn't been for a few years. I don't remember exactly, like in 2018, but he's not a huge chase guy. His chase numbers are right around league average. His stuff is incredible enough that it just works in the zone. And I mean, this kind of tracks with what you watch, right? Like, part of the reason that the two strike misses stand out more to you with Peralta is because guys they're not swinging a ton at it. That fastball that's like 5-6 balls above the plate, they're laying off it almost always. And it's something that I've never really been able to figure out. Not something that Peralta has talked about ton or been willing to talk about a ton either, but Pat Murphy did also. I mean, he agreed that like this is the thing that he needs to improve, or he has the area where he has the most room to improve. And it's not like this is suddenly gonna get better in the next month. So that is maybe the Peralta concern going into the playoffs. It's not new. If you're listening to this, you've seen it. You know, you've probably been frustrated by it at times too, which is what makes Peralta such an enigma in a way as a pitcher, because I think a lot of people can be frustrated is the right word, but like you watch him and you're like, okay, like there should just like, he should be getting more out of this. And yet he is getting a ton out of it. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not like Jacob Mizorowski's rookie year where it's like, okay, well, ERA is like 4 or 5. No, he's going to be a top 5 Cy Young finisher. Mm-hmm. Without question. Maybe top 3, maybe. And so by all accounts, like that's an amazing season. And yet I think it's just that like the weakness, there's really only the one thing, maybe. And it's glaring. And so that makes us kind of focus in on it. But yeah, that's for sure been the thing with Peralta. I mean, there's a bunch of numbers in my story. You can still find it. It's somewhere on our website. But when he is attacking, I mean, like, think about the Toronto start. Think about, I mean, there's probably a bunch of other starts that aren't coming to my mind. But when he's attacking, it's ball game over. Okay, another thing. The glass half full view of the start in Texas was like, well, he didn't do anything. Like, he pitched about the exact same as he did when he threw 29 scoreless innings. And then the glass half empty is like, well, he pitched the exact same as 29 scoreless innings as he did when he gave up 5 runs.
Yeah. All right, since I have no questions about Quinn Priester, let's talk about the last guy in the rotation, and that's Jose Quintana. He sounds like a calf injury on Sunday. He needed an MRI, which is a pretty big deal. Quintana, he only went 4 innings in the game, got taken out. It kind of seemed like it might be an effectiveness issue, but maybe not. So some concern there that he's not going to be available for what's left here. 2 weeks of the season before we get into the nitty gritty. You know, I was a couple things thinking. I mean, Jose Quintana has not pitched well. He's pitched quite poorly. His ERA is still below 4, and that's great. But that is a massive outperformance compared to his other, you know, more peripheral numbers. And you could see it. It's hard contact. He's getting hit around a lot. He got hit around in Texas. I mean, the Brewers weren't scoring runs for him, but like he was effective to start with and then had a really bad inning. And that ended up being kind of costing them. It, you know, like at the same time, given what we've seen with Mizorowski and maybe Woodruff not being healthy enough to like work a lot in the postseason or whatever, you know, I was like, Quintana's going to get postseason innings. I was kind of thinking they might just sideline him for the postseason. And then the more you think about it, it's like, no, I don't think they can. I think that they're going to have to use him in some capacity. But then he leaves this game on Sunday and I don't know if he's going to even be available. So this is a interesting development. I think you agree with me that you should probably only use Jose Quintana in the postseason anyway, if you are desperate, but they love him, you know, like Pat Murphy loves this guy. He was very important that they added him to the team before the season. And he was really good early in the season. I think they don't need him. I'm kind of curious a little bit. This ties into Robert Gasser and why they want him to be a reliever here. And they maybe just didn't leave him stretched out and have him come and work, you know, be the sixth man in the rotation. Kind of, we could talk about that separately if that's what you want to do, but give me your thoughts on Quintana and what happens if he's gone.
Yeah, Jose Quintana should not be throwing playoff innings for the Brewers. His FIP since coming off the IL, I think that was like the first week of June, was 4.95, so basically 5 coming into his start against the Cardinals. I don't love reducing. Actually, I don't. I'll say it. I don't like reducing baseball analysis to Statcast the blue and the red circles on Statcast. I don't like it, but I'm going to do it here. He's 11th percentile in expected ERA, 12th percentile in expected batting average, 6th percentile whiff percentage. That's not particularly surprising, but the concern is he's 33rd percent in walk rate and 22nd percentile in barrel rate.
There's, I mean, don't say he's like one of the worst starters in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, he's able to like outperform it, I think, in some wily veteran ways. And like, clearly his approach is his approach, and he's going to nibble, 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 and hopefully get through 5 innings. The funny thing is, normally he's actually the guy that ends up eating innings on this team, because they just let him They just let him ride.
Yeah.
But that's not a guy that should be pitching playoff innings on a staff that has the arms the Brewers have and has Robert Gasser sitting in AAA. I think it's time to see what Robert Gasser has. I think Robert Gasser could and should be allowed, like they should try as much as they can to see if he can play a significant role on this playoff roster, because lest we forget, like the dude's got good stuff and it's a nightmare for lefties. And if he's back from Tommy John, I mean, they slow played it. If he's back at, you know, close to what he was at when he unfortunately got hurt last summer, that's a weapon as an arm. And I don't even think he needs to be a starter per se. I think a bullpen role, a Swiss Army knife out getter role for him is perfect. It's perfect. You just let him mostly play up with those two pitches, that fastball and that sweeper. He can kind of put some of the other stuff in the back pocket a little bit, maybe bring it out as wrinkles. But I think it's an arm that presents you right now a lot more than Jose Quintana would.
I'm just really surprised that they activated him from his injured assignment at the beginning of the month and optioned him and decided that they didn't want to see what he could do as a starter. You can always pare him down midway through the month if you need to. I guess I'm not actually sure that's true. Maybe that's overstating it. Maybe they did need a lot of time. He is coming off of Tommy John surgery. I can understand the hesitance there. You've got Chad Patrick, who worked again this week. The Brewers have lost his last ten appearances if you count Sunday, since he worked in relief. I wouldn't count that. But like, Chad Patrick hasn't been part of a winning game since May 31st. And, I don't think he's pitched so poorly that he deserves to lose nine, you know, the Brewers deserve to lose his last nine starts, but
yeah, the anti-Quinn Priester.
Right. I know. Exactly. That's exactly right.
Get the man some runs.
But I mean, yes. But like, you know, Chad Patrick isn't somebody that you really want to rely on here. And I thought maybe it made sense. Have Robert Gasser be that sixth guy. Now there's some roster machinations that have to take place. They do have Eric Fetty on this roster still. They might need him to start games at this point, but it doesn't feel like a loss if they decided that maybe that little mini experiment is over. Or Yoel Piamps, a guy who they, you know, already cut once this year and re-added to the 40-man, like what would be the big deal if they lost him? And we could talk about like the bullpen, you know, Craig Yoho as well.
He should be 100%.
I mean, at this point, we could say that everyone knows how much we like that guy, and I, you know, that guy's, you know,
this is even so, this is not related to any of that. Like, just
I just don't think people are going to hear us anymore. They don't believe true. Us, basically. So 100%, it makes no sense that Craig Yoho, who has destroyed AAA all year, looked really good in his last outing.
He has nothing left to prove at AAA.
What? Why are they giving him zero leash? What has he done to deserve zero leash? Yoel Piamps keeps pitching.
It's not even that like he has nothing left to prove at AAA, because I think there's like Luis Arias, who's at AAA, has nothing left to prove at AAA yet. Like, I don't think he should be in the big leagues per se.
He's an emergency option.
Craig Yoho has like, I think he's checked the boxes that they've wanted to see him check. Maybe he's walked a few too many guys. Like he hasn't, I guess, but I feel like I just feel like that's a guy who has the stuff. I mean, did you see the swing O'Neill Cruz put on him?
Yeah, I did. It was special.
Now, Sunday in Pittsburgh.
That's one really good inning after a stretch of not so good big league innings. So like, you know, it's not that 45 seconds or whatever that inning was when he was pitching that you really want to hold up above others necessarily, but like
But there's a non-zero chance he could pitch his way onto a playoff roster, and there's currently a 0% chance on it because he's pitching in Nashville.
He could pitch in the seventh inning of a playoff game. Now, again, we are just pitching to our own.
Well, sure, he could. Maybe a non-competitive playoff game.
I'm
not there on setup guy yet. Okay. Like, let's see him do it in the big leagues a little bit.
I don't even know if I'm in on that yet either. But I do think he has a place here over some of the other options that are currently on the staff.
Yeah. Yep. We've done the Yoho talk. I don't even remember where we were.
Well, Gasser is really what we were digging in on. Like, why is Robert Gasser not here and maybe starting? And he probably will. If Quintana's hurt, they're probably going to ramp him back up to a starter's capacity, because unless they think Logan Henderson is going to be healthy for the playoffs, like you're going to need another option here somewhere. And Gasser being a lefty is the obvious, the sort of logical replacement for Quintana. So we'll see. Real quickly, before we get to three up, three down, who of the first basemen, are they going to leave one of those three guys off?
No.
It's, but then you have Andrew Monasterio and like a backup catcher and nothing else. Like, well, Perkins. I mean, yes, you have
Perkins.
Yeah. Perkins. So your left-handed bats are Jake Bowers and essentially Blake Perkins coming off the bench. Man, yeah. That's tough. That's an interesting bench. Bowers has been crushing the ball. And at this mm-hmm. point, I think we've kind of hinted at it just talking amongst ourselves. Is he your game one starter at first base? I mean, Rhys Hoskins coming off an injury, kind of being used as more of a pinch hitter at this point. Andrew Vaughn, he's still hitting the ball, but he's not crushing the ball.
I think it's matchup dependent. There are certain guys that certain righties that Andrew Vaughn might not hit as well.
Sure.
And also, and there's value in this too. Like the Brewers love him as a pinch hitter. Like Jake Bowers has a great understanding of what it takes, how to get his body ready, the process, and then like being comfortable in a pinch hit spot. And so that could factor into it too. Cause he's obviously, he has hit a big pinch hit home run before. He hit one in Texas just this week. So I think my Rhys Hoskins starting first baseman takes went out the window pretty dang fast there, but I'm back. I think it's Vaughn, but Bowers mixed in, and then Rhys Hoskins is the guy who hits for Ortiz in that first spot where, you know, Joy Ortiz gets two at bats. Congrats, buddy.
Right. But if you have the roster like it is, he hits and then he has to come out of the game and you've burned a second player right off the bat because Monasterio is the only guy who can play.
I don't think they end up getting like overly hurt by doing that. They'll have their five. They'll have those five guys, Hoskins, Bowers, Monasterio, Jansen, Perkins. Feels like pretty safe. Like that's the five right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you can maneuver as needed. Collins can play infield. There's another thing here too, that I feel like the Brewers would love for Blake Perkins to be able to be the starting center fielder, because the outfield defense has not been good. Maybe it's been fine, but there have been a lot of outs left out there between Collins and Churio specifically. But Perkins' bat is just not at a spot right now where you make that, like, where that's the decision you make. So I guess you could go Yelich left field and then Hoskins at DH.
That's the natural thing. Absolutely.
They're not going to do something that we don't see. So unless we start seeing it, that would be interesting. But I feel like the thing we're seeing is the thing they're going to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's also why I feel dubious about Yoho and Gasser still being at AAA. We talked about this with Brian Hudson last year. You know, they left him in AAA. We're like, they got to bring him up, right? He's been so essential. And then they didn't have him on the playoff roster. You know, they will show us what they intend to do. It's not going to be a secret. They're not going to come up with some top secret plan for game one. This is what they're going to do. So the longer they're there, the more, I guess, I wonder what's happening. But you're right. The logical thing. Yelich in left and figure it out from there.
I am now all in on just unleash Robert Gasser out of nowhere.
Let's do that. I love that
idea. I think you're right. I absolutely think you're right. If Gasser's going to pitch, we're going to see him. But I'm all in on here's this guy. He's on this team. You better have a ton of scout on him this year. Good luck. I do like that.
Do you want
to the Miz last year?
Yes, that would have been amazing. Do you want to talk about outfield defense now, or do you want to save it for three up, three down?
Save it for three up, three down.
Then let's do it. Let's get to it. Here are some of the more granular details from the week. We look back every week. It's our weekly segment, three up, three down.
There are a lot of adventures going on in the outfield.
A lot of adventures, Kurt.
I can't, like, not all the plays even come to my mind right away, but Jackson Churio made the, I know he robbed the homer against the Twins earlier this year, but that was the best play I've ever seen him make in the outfield, that catch to save a run against the Cardinals. Saturday night. Part of
the, turned into a big out.
Part of the fun clinch day. I mean, I thought there was no chance he gets to that ball, especially he's not maybe been moving at, doesn't feel like 100%. And he was busting it.
Yeah.
He started in the left center gap and made up so much ground. The ball like didn't even hang. I was like, oh, that thing's that's down. So a really impressive play there. But then also there's the one where he just miffed it at the wall. Isaac Collins has had some, I don't know if it's routes, I guess it's probably routes to balls. There was two. Actually, I don't know if he should have caught. There was the play, a large Nupar double also Saturday where Collins just missed it at the wall. I don't know if he should have gotten there. He did have a long way to run, but he definitely like going back on the ball is definitely, I don't know what the numbers exactly, they probably bear this out, but that's definitely his weakness. But then he also should have caught a ball that Joey Ortiz seemed to like lose in the lights. There and like Texas, it feels like 2 weeks or 2 years ago, but I think there are some defensive plays. South Prelick threw a guy out. He's been fine. No qualms, no concerns there. But yeah, the outfield defense is one of the question marks I have on this team right now, because Collins Churio is not like, I think the numbers would tell you it's fine, but they have not been playing consistent enough with the gloves the last month or so.
Churio made a catch on Sunday where he also dove. He got just a terrible jump. In fact, it looked like he was kind of running at half speed. Made the play, made the catch. Didn't really feel like he should have had to dive, but I mean, that's kind of another illustration of what you see. Like he does make some incredible plays, and some of it is born of some strange or goes side by side with some strange outfield play. I think they're probably better off if he's in left field and Blake Perkins is in center, but then you need the bats to go with it, which means they're probably better off with Yelich in left field and Churio in center and Isaac Collins having two switch hitters coming off the bench. These are the conversations that Pat Murphy, I'm sure, is having and is trying to suss out as he looks toward the playoffs. What gives you the best chance to win? Obviously late you put the defense in if you can, but you know, Blake Perkins is, you know, he's just limited offensively. A lot of these guys are limited offensively, you know, and Collins has cooled off after a really, really impressive start to the season and putting himself in the rookie of the year race. I think that, you know, I would feel like maybe he's not the front runner anymore or would be seen as the front runner. I don't know. But I wonder if he does end up coming off the bench in the playoffs. Okay. So what, let's see, what's my number one? I was not prepared. Michael Hellman.
The Mayo man. JR, I yes. did not know who this man was.
I had never heard that name before he made mincemeat of the Milwaukee Brewers during this series in Texas. He not only did he club the grand slam against Quintana, another home run the following day. He made catches at the wall. He had clutch hits galore.
He robbed Bryce Terang.
Yeah.
He was incredible.
Honestly, like just playing out of his mind for 3 days. Wild time. Is he like a career minor leaguer? Like he's not somebody who's been with the team all year. He kind of just popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah, he was a Twins guy. I looked this up for about 2 seconds. Well, maybe 2 minutes in Texas, which again feels like it was 2 years ago. So I might have forgotten, but I believe he was a Twins guy. I think he might have come up with the Twins last year and somehow, some way, they said goodbye. I don't know. They got rid of him, and he cool flipped his way over to Texas, where he is now dominating. He's the Duke of Globe Life Field.
Purchased by the St. Louis Cardinals to start the year. He then was selected. He was also hurt. He was a Pirate. He was selected off waivers in May by the Pirates. So but he never saw a big league action with any of these teams. Then Texas takes him in like 5 days later. He was a Pirate for like 5 days. And Texas, you know, kept him down there. He's had played in 25 games now this year. But he has hit 5 homers. He's got a 935 OPS in 25 games. He has been a banger, not just against the Milwaukee Brewers, but man, does it feel like he made them his personal torment this week. That was tough.
The Rangers lineup as a whole, like
They're so Brewers. They're so Brewers.
That was the first thing I thought when I saw the lineup. I'm like, I watch a lot of baseball. I don't know some of these guys. I don't know Alejandro Ozuna. I don't know Michael Helmut. I don't know Cody Freeman. I'd like seen his name, but I don't know Cody Freeman. And sure enough, they did it to the Brewers. They brew out Brewers the Brewers. So good for them. JR, I saw Rowdy this week.
I was just going to give you a name that you do know. I was just going to say a name, and it was Rowdy Tellez.
It was nice. It was a nice time. I think I can say for certain that the relationship that Rowdy had with, I think, his team, the city, the media, the fans, I think it was unique in Milwaukee relative to everywhere else that he has been since. Rowdy is like, how do I put it? He's one of one. There is not another person or player, but more so person in baseball, quite like Rowdy Tellez. And maybe it's an acquired taste. Maybe he has to hit for it to be an acquired taste. It's not like he's not hitting in Texas, but nevertheless. And so it was good to see him. I think Milwaukee was good to him, and he really enjoyed his time here. And not to speak for him, but I don't know. It was good to see him. He forgot my name, but he did not forget my name, if you know what I mean. He called me Kip, which was what he called me the second year I covered him. The first year I was Kirk. And then so he said Adam McKelvey was there. He said hi to Adam. We went up to see him, said hi Adam. They said hi Kip. And he was like, I don't even remember your name. But it was good to see Rowdy. And then JR, he had a big hit.
Ben.
He had a double to tie the game on Saturday for the Rangers. That they took the lead in the top of the ninth. They won the game. And the Brewers officially, beyond the shadow of a doubt, clinched. On a tee for you.
Yes, a hit against Edwin Diaz. He drives it into the corner. Rangers end up coming back to win that game. And the Brewers learned Saturday afternoon before they began their game that they had clinched. Here's the thing. here's what we wrote at jsonline.com. The Brewers had actually clinched already on Friday night based on the Mets losing, the Mets getting into the equation. The Brewers, of course, have the tiebreaker over the Mets. The Mets and Giants were knotted up with 72 losses. Mets were a half game ahead, but it's about the loss column if we're talking magic numbers and scenarios. And there was no scenario where the Milwaukee Brewers could not make the playoffs at that point. That was something I played out, gamed all that out at jsonline.com and pointed out, here's a four-way, here's a five-way, six-way tie. The Brewers make the playoffs in every scenario. They have clinched Friday night. We wrote about it. It is my belief that MLB had maybe just missed it. I mean, have to be completely honest. I missed it too. I didn't know. I do my magic number update. Did not think about the Mets entering the equation that dramatically, but they lost six in a row. Life comes at you fast when there's a game every night. There's a million scenarios for all these teams. So I missed it, and I'm following the Brewers specifically. So easy thing to miss. But as we were talking about it, you and I on Saturday afternoon, we're like, the Brewers should be in, right? There's only five teams that can finish ahead of them and six teams make the playoffs. So we gave that out. The Brewers and MLB didn't really, they didn't really say much about that other than their scenarios told them that the Mets had to lose or the Giants had to lose or the Brewers had to win on Saturday and they would get a spot. So the Mets lost. It became doubly official. And of course, actually the Brewers ended up winning. So that made it all the better. And the Giants ended up losing too. So they were in on so many counts by Saturday night and everything we had became moot. I would have loved to have known what happened if the Mets had won that game. They were winning against the Rangers. They were on some kind of free fall and seen what happened after that because, it could have gotten awkward. I don't know. Like the Brewers were already in. Again, this is meaningless conversation because, of course, they were always going to be in. The only scenarios were the most far-fetched things in the universe requiring two teams to win out and the Brewers to lose out. And so none of this really matters. It was a matter of hours before things were very much straightened out. But that was just our Saturday, like looking at scenarios and being like, what are they waiting for? They could party now. They could party whenever they want. They did party anyway, so it worked out.
So correct me if I'm wrong here. But the whole crux of it, right, was that the worst case scenario for the Brewers was was a tiebreak.
Yes, because the Giants and Mets were both at 72 losses. Yes. The Brewers can do no worse than 72 losses. So the only scenario that works has all three of those teams tied, and maybe more teams, but those three specifically had to be tied. And there was no situation where those three were tied where the Brewers ended up not at least the number six seed, the bottom playoff team.
And in most cases, because they have the head-to-head tiebreak over the Mets, and that's kind of how it peels off. You get the first one, then you keep peeling down.
Yes.
Most of those tiebreaker scenarios were taken care of. Not all of them. Not all of them, because the Phillies couldn't be involved. Like, maybe the Mets peel off first and some of them, I don't know. And then, like, if there's tiebreakers involving the Dodgers, the Brewers obviously have it over the Dodgers. So,
yeah, I mean, the NFL does this too. When you have many teams tied, which happens in the NFL all the time, you basically have it's usually records against the other teams involved in the tiebreaker. One team stands out. Okay, you take that team, you give them the top remaining option, and then you reassess the next teams. Maybe if there's two teams left, you do a simple head to head or whatever else the tiebreaking criteria are, but you don't just like rank three teams that are tied and say you're one, you're two, you're three. It's okay. One, you get in the game, and now two and three, we're going to compare you guys anew. So that's the system that they've laid out according to their tiebreaking procedures, unless that system is different, because there was a scenario where you rank four teams, the Brewers would be out of the playoffs. Three teams get in, the Brewers would have been fourth, but it's, you know, again, just following their tiebreaking criteria, you peel a team off the top and then reassess who's left. That there was no scenario where the Brewers would miss the playoffs in that case. Again, completely moot, but interesting for a little while.
JR, I am done trying to figure out what the vibe is with William Contreras at the plate.
It hasn't been great.
One extra base hit this month. He's hit some balls hard, but the power has kind of been zapped away again. So, I don't know. Earlier we thought it was the thumb. I don't think it's the thumb. It's probably just a two-week stretch of baseball, but still, that's kind of jarring to see from William Contreras, who's such a good doubles hitter and obviously hits the ball so hard. That's a guy they need hitting in the postseason. They have a lot of people who can hit singles. They do not necessarily have as much consistent slug, and he can be consistent slug. He can, like, when he's hot, it's like some level of guaranteed slug every game. So maybe he'll get back there. I'm saying it fluctuates a lot with him, and his swing kind of fluctuates too. Like, there's some variations in there. And that's how it's been for a while. It's a vibe swing. We support that, but it's definitely something to monitor the last 2 weeks. It is on our radar.
I foretell that he will be right again by the postseason. I think he's going to get on a little bit of a run and help this team quite a bit in the postseason. That's my thought. My number third and final, number three, third and final, is Danny Jansen. Danny Jansen. I feel like fans are getting a little restless with him. He has struggled at the plate. He doesn't get a lot of opportunities, but when he does, it's not great offensively. His framing has come under fire a little bit, somewhat by us, I would say. He hit a home run on Sunday, and the Brewers did not win the game, but Danny Jansen hit a very much a no-doubter home run that had to feel good. First home run with this team. Of course, he's the Appleton, Wisconsin native, traded at the trade deadline to the Brewers. The Brewers are, you know, probably looking for a little more production out of that backup catcher spot, but ultimately it is a backup catcher spot. He is a veteran. He does have a lot of experience. He can hit for power. This is a team that doesn't do a lot of that. So even though it hasn't worked out yet, that's ultimately why he's here. Like, to hit some bombs, man. So he hit a bomb on Sunday. Good to see. We'll see if that if there's more. Then maybe that gets the, you know, the lid off a little bit for Danny Jansen. What did we not talk about in three up, three down? We did see Isaac Collins at third base briefly. I think we mentioned that. That's interesting. So instead of Sal Frelick, here's this year's outfielder playing a little bit of third base. Of course, Collins has played a lot of infield in the minors, but not third base. So that's going to be interesting to see if that develops, you know, as like a late game emergency situation. We'll see. I think we kind of alluded to it, but nobody could hit the ball out of Texas. I mean, Bryce Terang hit a bomb that was robbed by Michael Hellman, but like, just felt like they could not solve Texas. It was the outfield play, the hitting the ball for power. It's just like they were crushing the ball some games and not, especially that middle game. They just did not have anything to show for it. That stadium, good riddance. But I will point out that the Brewers went to Texas in 2023 and swept the Rangers. That was in August. And then the Rangers went on to win the World Series. So maybe this is just going to happen in reverse this year. We saw a lot more Aaron Ashby. Aaron Ashby pitches like every day. I don't know where we're going with that. Some days he looks great. He looked pretty good on Sunday. But man, he has just been worked so, so much. It is a concern. I fear that he is continuing to pitch in just about every game, and usually for more than three outs, or certainly into a second inning, if that's a possibility. We kind of mentioned Jake Bauer's an absolute fire. I think we went into that. You wrote a story about Andrew Vaughn. Really fun story at jsonline.com. How he remembers just about every at-bat he's had. You were quizzing him. That's the story. Quizzing him on some of his highlights and then also a couple randoms. And he was pretty good. He didn't get every detail down, but he was pretty dang good. I loved that story from you. So absolutely go check that out if you have not seen it. Andrew Vaughn, genius? Question mark?
It's awesome. I wish I'd gone more random.
Yeah.
I didn't give him enough credit. I was like, let's do your first hit. And then,
right. Of course he's going to remember that.
I know he would remember the hit, but like he had every detail of it down, every detail of the home run.
Yeah.
I should have gone more random.
Yeah. I mean, and last thing, we didn't talk a lot about this just amazing rally. Andrew Monasterio comes up again. He's had a walk-off hit. One was an error in 2023, but a walk-off at bat each of the past three seasons. A great story he has been. He battles through a 10-pitch at bat to drive home Caleb Durbin with the winning run. Durbin had doubled in the tying run in the 10th inning. A very fun victory. And Kurt broke a losing streak for you because you were on your way to like a seventh straight loss or eighth straight loss. I don't know that in games that you specifically cover, not to be, they rallied for you, Kurt. They got you back off the schneid.
I do keep tabs on that. Well, like not enough tabs that I could tell you my record, but you definitely know when you've covered a lot of losses in a row, but you also know when you covered a lot of wins in a row, that was me. And you won't believe this, but when they won 14 games in a row, I think I had like 13 straight wins at some point, just absurd. And frankly was running out of words when, by the time Andrew Monasterio hit a tape measure shot along the Ohio River, I wrote my story that night. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
AI did not write my story that night. But I did think of that. I did think of that idea because I had nothing to write. We keep tabs on it.
We do. All right, let's go back in time a little bit. We'll revisit the past, not too distant past in this case. It is Remember When. Once again, did I remember to tease the interview? I didn't. Ricky Weeks, assistant manager. I feel like I don't know exactly the correct term, assistant manager, bench coach for the Milwaukee Brewers. He has been a guest on this show before. Wanted to catch up with him, ask him a lot about the home run derby, the alumni home run derby, when he was welcoming back all of his friends. That was probably pretty cool for him. Briefly chatted with him, give him we haven't caught up with him since he was named to this position. So that interview is coming up here shortly. I am not going to go far back in time at all because we had Rowdy this week. We had a clinch this week. So I'm actually just going to revisit a couple recent clinches, as in like the past couple clinches, because there's some synergy with what we had here in 2025. But in 2023, of course, everybody remembers Rowdy Tellez was pitching for the Milwaukee Brewers to record the final three outs that officially clinched a playoff berth for the Milwaukee Brewers. He was on the hill in Miami. The Brewers won 16-1. Tellez's first career pitching performance, got two pop-outs and a strikeout. But Kurt, do you remember something? What was up with that strikeout? There was something unusual about that strikeout. Do you recall?
No.
He threw four balls. The umpire literally lost track of the count, should have walked the guy, and did not. And ended up getting credit for the strikeout. Incredible stuff, actually. Brewers, if you may have forgotten this because you remember Rowdy, they had a 12-run inning in this game. Josh Donaldson, shout out, 2-run homer to kick off a 12-run inning. And then they go strikeout, walk, walk, single by Contreras, double by Santana, double by Canna, single by Sal Frelick, single by Willie Adames, ground out, single by Terang. Double by Perkins, home run by Yelich, just an incredible run. Oh my gosh, what an inning. And then the Brewers ended up clinching a playoff berth, just as they did here on Saturday. Now later, they also had a kind of remarkable 2023 clinch as well, when the Brewers lost 4-1 to the St. Louis Cardinals. Again, the Cardinals were in town. The Brewers did not play well. It looked like that was going to be the case on Saturday, where they would lose to the Cardinals on a day they clinched. The Brewers were down, or rather So the Brewers were kind of slumping through, and so fans started turning into the Cubs-Braves game. The Cubs were up 6-0 and they end up blowing this game. Seiya Suzuki drops a routine fly ball in right field in the eighth with two outs in the eighth and allowed two runs to score. Sean Murphy hit the ball, and that became the winning, the tying and winning run, 6-5 loss. That is what officially got the Brewers in to the, or got them a division championship. They then celebrated, went full bore celebration at that point after a loss, a 4-1 loss. But that was because the Cubs had lost elsewhere in, you know, in Atlanta. Last year, if we go back to last year, it was also kind of a similar vibe. Chicago had lost to Oakland earlier in the day, 2024. This is September 18th, 2024. This is when the Brewers both won the division and clinched a playoff berth on the same day. The Brewers knew they were in. They knew they were in, but the champagne celebration was going to wait till after the game. And then Jake Bowers drives the ball into the corner, down the first baseline against the Philadelphia Phillies, bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, one out. And he ends up tying the game. Jackson Churio had been at third base. He had given the, that was it. That gave the Brewers a 2-1 win. Churio had tripled leading off that inning. He returns to his locker with a stroller full of non-alcoholic beverages because Jackson Churio at the time, still 20 years old. So this week's Remember When does not go back very far, but man, sounds like a lot of the stuff that they just went through. Walk-off wins on clinch days, Cubs losing. Magic number, by the way, to win the division is 8 at the end of the weekend here. Any Cubs loss, any Brewers win, those are the only teams that you have to care about at this point. They can get that 8 number down, they win the Central. Probably going to happen on the road trip. Kurt, whew, that was a lot. Love a good rowdy memory, love a good clinch memory. And now, we're going to get your take. It's Kurt's take of the week. This is how we close down every episode of Microbrew. Kurt, give it to us. It is Kurt Blanc.
That's right, folks. That's right. I got a lot to talk about.
Bring the takes. Bring them all.
Well, I was going to talk about baseball stadiums, but now I got to talk about clinches.
You're going to talk about baseball saves?
Baseball stadiums, sorry. Saves?
No, sorry. You probably didn't.
Baseball stadia.
Stadia. Yeah, Globe Life. Not it.
Not it. Third lowest on my ranks right now. I have not been to every stadium.
Tell me lower.
I've been to, let's look at my iPhone note 23. That feels, I feel like I'm missing one here, maybe, because I think I've, well, Sacramento, I'm at a zero. Okay. There,
yeah,
but I feel like I'm at more than that. Anyway, whatever, that's what I have. I have 23. I'm not going to read you the whole list because no one really cares about my ranks that much, but I will tell you my bottom three is
I care about that.
Is Chicago, Southside, right field, Chase Field, don't like it. Energy,
interesting, like
energy zombie place, just not my vibe. Sure. And then Globe Life Field is right up there. Was not one of my favorites. But those are my bottom three. My top five, JR, San Francisco, Dodger Stadium. Sure. PNC Park.
I like it.
I feel like I'm just going pretty classic with those three.
Chalk.
What are you gonna chalk? They're great. They're great for a reason. Petco Park. And then the Trop. Oh, the Trop. I miss the Trop. I love the Trop.
That is the controversial take of the week, to have that top five on your list.
The Trop never has received the respect it deserves.
Its roof just evaporated.
I guess it's done now, but
it's over.
That's rest in peace to the Trop. It was such a wonderful, quirky baseball stadium. And not in like a cavernous, well, okay, a little energy vampire-y, but it wasn't a cavern. It was just because no one went to the games. Let me be very, very clear.
Yeah. Like,
people could be at a game at Chase Field or in Texas, and it just feels so cavernous. So I don't know. I love the Trop. I miss the Trop. Come back to me, the Trop.
Have you ever seen a game at the Metrodome?
I went to a Packers-Vikings game there. Week 17 in, I think, 2012.
I would be interested in comparing those two stadiums. I found the Metrodome quirky and endearing in an endearing way. I remember Justin Morneau hitting a home run just off the baggie, just the sound that it made, the weird sound.
Yes, I think I would have loved. I mean, it's probably not a great place to play baseball physically. And the Trop was definitely not a great place to physically play baseball. But I think I would have really liked it as a baseball stadium. That's where I stand on the subject matter.
Okay.
All anyway, right. JR, I'm not done.
No, of course. Of course
you,
not.
You just sparked another thought in me. Part of me feels like we're doing clinches backwards.
Interesting. Tell me more.
Like the making the playoffs should be the big celebration. And then when you win the division, you champagne toast.
I just feel like you take a risk by not celebrating the first thing because it assumes you get to the second thing. What if you don't?
And that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, the Brewers are in a great spot, even after losing a game in the division on Sunday. But it's happened in the past where teams, you know, feel like, oh, well, we can't celebrate this yet. It's too early. Oh, like, we got bigger goals. What are we doing celebrating this when we haven't wrapped up the division yet? Maybe it's they just don't want their players to go too hard when they got games that matter still. So that would be fair. But I think it's a little backwards. I think you just you get the celebration out of the way right away. Or maybe you celebrate both. Wild idea. I'm a sucker for baseball, like clinching celebrations. I know some people think it's silly when, you know, you win the wild card series and you're popping champagne. No.
Yeah.
No, 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 no. That's exactly how it should be. Because other sports they don't do it like that. And baseball does. And it's for good reason. It's because you're doing this for 7 months. And I think it's awesome. Also, is champagne the right? Well, it's like, here's the thing. It's not even really a champagne celebration. It's like a beer celebration. And some people have champagne bottles.
Yeah. Because it's easier to spray that stuff.
And it's cheaper. It's cheaper too.
Yeah. Better visual to be spraying champagne everywhere.
I think we should, what I'm saying is it needs to be diversified. There needs to be more options of things to spray and drink, but mostly to spray. I know champagne, I get the point of champagne here, but I'd like to see it mixed up a little bit. I want to diversify the assets.
I question this because I just like, you need carbonation to really like get something to spray that way or pressure, you know, champagne bottles are built for this, you know, other than soda, and no one wants to be sprayed with soda and end up a sticky mess. Granted you get sticky from all this stuff anyway, but like, that's not something.
Okay. But the main thing they're dumping on each other is beer.
Yeah, no, I know they're going to get, yes.
Get a seltzer.
Yeah, I don't know.
Seltzers.
I mean, I do think like when you have a team that has made the playoffs as many times as the Brewers had, it does start to look kind of like the same thing every time. It's like, oh, great, they're celebrating in the clubhouse again, just like they did last year. And it is easy as a fan to get a little numb to that, you know, and they do work so hard. And after 7 months, they should be rewarded for every step of the way. But I think like when they don't celebrate the getting into the playoffs and wait for the division, I understand it a little bit. It's, you know, like the Brewers have done this before. They want the division, which of course they've done before. They've did that the last 2 years, but they want the, you know, to really make the big prize matter. And, you know, if they don't get to celebrate, if they lose it, it's going to be a disappointing season, a finish to the season. So I'm guessing they don't care that they don't get to celebrate and maybe they turn things around in the playoffs. I don't know. Because, you know, they clinched, and I actually wasn't sure if they were going to do a big fancy champagne celebration. I think that the fact that they did or didn't, like, I wasn't thinking, oh, I've got to set some time aside to be there for the clinch, you know, like, and get video and stuff. Like, it didn't even occur to me this year that, oh, I should do that. No, maybe we've seen it before. We've seen the visuals before. They're the same. They're the same every year. I don't know. Those are just some random thoughts.
I got my best photo last year during the clinch.
Yeah.
Of the whole season. Well, all the photos I take a lot of photos.
Is that the Brandon Woodruff?
Woodruff, yeah. On the cigar. Yeah. There's another really good one of Ricky, but it's Woodruff with the cigar.
Did you just tee me up for the Ricky Weeks interview? Is that what you did for me?
No, I forgot that was this week. Good job. We went 1 hour, 10 minutes. Oh god.
You were not listening to me when I teased the interview. And that's fair. That's fair.
You did?
Right before Remember When, which is your time to sort of tune out for a second. So I totally get it.
I checked the football game.
Oh, understood. Let's get back to the football game. Meanwhile, speaking of football, people who are built like football linebackers, let's talk to Ricky Weeks. Caught up with him for a few minutes during the last homestand. Wanted to ask him a few questions about his role here as assistant manager and associate manager, I should say. And, you know, what's up with him? So that's what's coming up next. We will be back with you next week. There is a chance they have clinched by next weekend. don't think it'll happen. I think that's probably pretty far-fetched still, but it is possible that they will have clinched the division by the next time we chat. And we will once again check in on all the pitchers and everything that's set up in the roster and all these things for the postseason. And maybe there'll be some new storylines to watch. We'll see what happens with Jose Quintana. Thank you for listening to Microbrew. We will chat with you again very soon. Bye-bye, everybody. My guest is Ricky Weeks, former Milwaukee Brewers player, now the bench coach, of course, of the team, and has been for the last couple seasons. I want to start and ask you about the Alumni Home Run Derby. I know, I don't know if you were asked to be in it. I would have loved to have seen it. I'm sure a lot of people would have. I don't know if that was on the table for you, seeing a lot of your old friends. Take me through what that was like for you and seeing those guys hit, and I guess if you had any jealousy over not being in there.
No, it was unbelievable, you know, to say the least. You know, I don't think nobody who was behind the scenes, who put it all together, but again, the guys here could ever imagine the type of crowd that we had.
It was wild.
Because to me, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously to see old friends come back and see the guys who came before me, see some guys who came after me.
Yeah.
It was pretty special.
Did you get asked to play? Was there a chance you could have done it?
I guess so, but I didn't want to take away from
sure, me
being here coaching and the guys.
Yeah,
and that's not me anyway. So
plus, if you don't hit one, you've got all these players to answer.
No, I was gonna hit one.
Oh, yeah, okay,
I was gonna
hit
one, but no, you know, just aside. Now it's all about the players and you know, just being here for the guys. That's, you know, that was you know, included.
You got to be in a home run derby back in the All-Star game in 2011. What do you remember from that? Was that fun? Was it stressful because there is such a spotlight on you at that point, or what do you take away from that one?
No, it was fun. It was fun to be honest with you. I don't think I took it so serious than everybody else. I was just happy to be there. I had a bunch of family in town. So to me, it's just a special moment.
Yeah.
Just going through the whole process and getting picked and things like that. So for me, it was just an opportunity to be out there on the big stage and to go out there and perform.
When you started back with the Brewers in 2022, different general manager, kind of a different era, different manager.
Right.
Were you hopeful that this is kind of what would happen, that you'd be able to move your way up into an on-field coaching capacity, or was that not something you anticipated? I mean, how has this journey gone as you saw it? Like, how did it unfold for you?
No, for me, it was always, I wanted to be in the front office and kind of, you know, be in a small room and kind of affect change in a certain kind of way, I guess, per se. But at the same time, you know, you just want to learn more about the organization, how we do things.
And, yeah.
You know, that's what we're trying to do. But it was never a forethought of mine to come out to the dugout in any capacity because I just like my time, you know, down below and talking to young guys and things like that.
Yeah.
And affecting change that way.
What do you do? Like a bench coach, I think people know you're the number two guy, but what are some of the things you're specifically in charge of on a day-to-day basis?
No, basically day-to-day basis, just, man, you got to charge the offensive information, you know, relaying that to Murph and the kind of just being the, you know, the guy inside the, you know, his right-hand man inside the dugout in-game situation. So, man, doing those things. And obviously you got some other stuff, you know, besides that, taking care of guys and, man, in front of capacity of communication and things like that. Just kind of like a jack of all trades, and for the most part. So that's my job right there.
Was it different than you expected getting into this role?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I'm a pretty open-minded guy. So and coming to a situation, not really know what's going to happen. I did have some things that I wanted to do and things that I had to do.
Sure.
That I want to tackle that way. But I think the biggest thing for me was coming in, you know, to a great opportunity and just coming in and try to affect change the positive.
How would you describe Pat Murphy if people ask you?
Eclectic. very day-to-day as far as emotions, as far as in a very positive way though.
My
thing, a lot of time, you know, you gotta understand, you know, as a manager, you have so many things going on and so many different moving parts that you gotta understand. You gotta trust people around you, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But also you gotta, you know, put stuff in motion to where, you know, you see fit. And I think he's done a great job of that, obviously, with our team going, you know, and doing the work.
Yeah. You've seen the city at its best when a team goes deep into a playoffs and or gets to the playoffs, in your case, for the first time in forever, like how on fire it is. How would you, for somebody who hasn't been in Milwaukee or hasn't seen Milwaukee's baseball fandom, how would you explain it? How do you describe the city of Milwaukee's baseball love?
It's unchallenged, I think. I've been around the game for a while now and been a lot of places in baseball. And every time you come back, you just see the genuine love of baseball, the genuine love of sports inside the state,
yeah,
in general. But and let alone the Milwaukee Brewers. So, I don't think people really understand like the magnitude of Brewers baseball here in the city, man, let alone the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But you know, it's pretty special as a player and as a staff member, just understanding the severity of that and going out there and just trying to put on for the city and for the state.
Are you surprised at how different this team is from, say, the 2011 team that was so good and hit all the homers that you guys hit, but then right. This team is built so differently. Like, do you ever sit back and marvel at that?
Of course, I mean, but at the same time, I think there's always one common denominator on any good team. It's that clubhouse. I don't care what you say. I don't care what kind of metric we could put on it or not put on it.
Yeah.
But that really does mean a lot. And you know, these guys remind me of those teams of the really tight clubhouse. There was no really like subsectors of groups and breaking off and kind of going rogue or every case we want to call it.
Yeah.
But they genuinely love each other and they go out there and compete, and you know, the game itself, it shows them out there doing it.
How do you think that's happened for so long? I feel like that's something a lot of players have shared, and yet there are there's general manager change, right. Managerial change, so much turnover. What is it about this team, this franchise?
Well, I mean, it all boils down to leadership. You start with Mark at the top and trick your way down. We've had guys over the years that's kind of put up some good rosters and some good people in the clubhouse. And when you go back to Doug Melvin, Dave Stearns, and now Matt Arnold, they've done a really good job of keeping that culture the same pretty much throughout the years.
Yeah. All right, so last one. There's a second baseman here who's having a nice little power surge, and right. I don't know if we've seen many second basemen hit for power anymore. I feel like that's kind of gone away, and yet now we've got something else. So what have you seen from Bryce Durang, and are you worried he's going to threaten some of your second base power numbers? That's not off the table anymore.
No. I think the biggest thing for me, man, is just somebody going to join it. I think I've seen Bryce in the minor leagues and on his way up.
That's right.
It's been a pretty good in the maturation process for him, I think.
You
see Bryce come into this skinny kid who can play shortstop, play second base, feel the right way, and then you see him gradually get better and better at the plate and things like that. So I'm just happy to see him you kind of expand his repertoire per se. But it's just been a joy watching Buffy and doing that.
All right, Ricky Weeks, thank you so much, sir.
You got it.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.